Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Come on.
Welcome to Lifeblood. This is George G, and the time is right. Welcome today's guest, strong and powerful David Bonson. David, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready.
Excited to have you on. David is the Chief Investment Officer and the Managing Partner of the Bonson Group. They're a national wealth management firm. He's consistently named top financial advisor and thought leader. He's consistently appearing on many popular news outlets that you are well aware of and accustomed to watching. He's the author of There's No Free Lunch, 250 Economic Truths. He is a podcaster, committed to community member, and we're excited to have you back on the show. David, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, the personal life is very boring. I am married for 21 years, three kids, one of which is senior in high school, one of which is about to start her freshman year of high school. And then a baby boy who is actually 12 years old and does not like being referred to as a baby boy. And I, as far as why I do what I do, this is my life's calling. I absolutely love financial markets and most importantly, love the human action that undergirds them. And so managing the stewardship of capital is a blessing, but happens to be very connected to that which animates me, which is free enterprise itself.
I love it. And I enjoyed our first conversation and I loved the book. It's such a good read because it's these 250 different ideas. And for a lot of them, maybe I had a passing idea about them, but you do such a good job of explaining just a little bit more about what they are and what they really mean. So it was very, very thought-provoking for me. And in light of the new legislation that passed, I wanted to have you on because it's tough to make heads and tails of things. So when I hear that, or when people hear that we're hiring, the IRS hired 85,000 or however many new agents, it's like, well, what's really going on there from your perspective?
Yeah, I actually don't think they're going to end up getting 87,000 agents. And just to give context as to where that comes from, the Biden administration ran a report that indicated how many they could hire. It was some department, you know, within the bureaucracy of that branch. And they came back and said that within this amount of particular budget, the IRS would be able to hire 87,000 new agents. And my guess is that by the time they hire a whole bunch of non-agents with that money, which you could argue might be somewhat less intrusive into the lives of American citizens, but even more wasteful. But this is what government does. They waste money. And I would imagine they'll hire a whole bunch of bureaucrats and admin and probably some, you know, diversity officers and things in there. And so when all is said and done, maybe some ESG, maybe there'll be a need for some ESG at the IRS to kind of better track their carbon footprint. And then they'll hire some tax enforcement. And I think it will be largely pretty bad. And what I mean by that is not people like me and people like most of my clients that are paying their taxes and are doing so legally, but are certainly utilizing the resources that they have available to minimize taxes legally within the disaster of a complex tax code that Congress in its infinite wisdom continues to deliver. And where I think the, let's call it 50,000 up to 87,000 agents end up being a nuisance is the only way that they can move the needle, which is more people of the same IQ that they generally hire are not going to do a better job collecting money from hedge funders with Harvard MBAs and 50 accountants and 100 lawyers and so forth. It's just, it's not going to happen. What they can do is go find that Uber driver who isn't reporting all of his tips and other nonsense like that. And so they have to justify their existence. So they will end up getting some pound of flesh out of this, but it will be small ball. And I think that's the best you can hope for, but I think it will be intrusive into the lives of Americans. And then what you really can't measure is how much the enforcement effort will go into chasing some additional tax revenue that turns out not to deliver. I mean, some might say for that poor Uber driver, well, hey, if he owed the taxes, he owed the taxes. But what about when they go after someone and there isn't, in fact, any money owed? The one thing I've been audited on consistently throughout my adult life as a good earner and a person of means is on my charitable contributions. And I happen to be in a position to and have causes I believe in substantially where I've given a lot, and it's a high dollar amount and a decent percentage. And they come after it every year, and I respond every year, and it's fine every year. There's no follow-up action. There's no problem. They just want documentation and whatnot. But how much resources goes in to chasing something down, and it doesn't lead to any additional monies? And so I was thinking about that as low-hanging fruit for these new agents to just go harass people that are claiming high charitable contributions. And I don't think very many people claim charitable contributions and aren't really doing it. It's pretty cut and dry how you prove it. You have your canceled check or wire transfer, and the charitable entity has their donation letter that they legally have to send. And yet their manpower and the bureaucracy and the time and the effort going after it, checking it all and so forth. It's silly to think about. So I am against the effort, and it's not because I'm against tax compliance. It's just that what they don't understand is the fundamental problem is that the tax code incentivizes high degree of effort at minimizing taxes from people who have the means to do so. And it is very cut and dry on more middle-class people. But when they say they know there's a certain dollar amount out there that's being uncollected, I don't believe them. If they knew it, why wouldn't they be collecting it? You don't need 87,000 more people to know. You've identified that this hedge fund guy in Miami is cheating you. If you've identified it, go knock on his door. You know, they haven't identified it. It's a model-driven suspicion that is not met with reality for those of us who actually deal with high net worth people every day.
Interesting. I always try to assume that people's interests are honest and genuine, and they have positive motivations. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But in this example, do you think is it a function of they just think or assume that there's all this money out there, like you just said, and in order for us to get this fictitious pot of money, we need more people to do it?
Yeah, I think that there's two things. There was a cart before the horse thing, in that to justify the deficit spending that the Manchin-Schumer bill involved, they needed to pro forma both to get Manchin's vote and to some degree sell the American people, and then also to get a score back from CBO, Congressional Budget Office, that was going to show something being either revenue neutral or even deficit reducing. So they have to tell their computer that they're collecting a certain amount of new revenue. Mm. And when you don't have a new tax doing so, or a new fee, or an expenditure cut that is an actual hard input, you have to make something up. And you have, and in this case, they're making up a imagined amount of new revenue. So the purpose of this is not to collect new revenue. The purpose of it was to tell their computer they're going to collect new revenue politically to pass the spending side. Besides Joe Manchin himself, they don't actually care about collecting the revenue.
But they need the money.
Well, who's they? You and I as American citizens, the people listening to the podcast, or the elected people of Congress? They don't need the money. if they needed, what are they projecting? This is going to generate $120 billion or something. An entity that has run up $31 trillion of debt and that regularly runs in a good year, $1 trillion deficit, and a bad year, $2 trillion deficit. They don't actually care about collecting the money. There's no interest in some sort of fiscal balance, but politically they cared about the optics of this. And that's where that IRS input comes from.
So when they say we will not audit, there'll be no new audits on income earners or households of under $400,000 a year, you don't believe that?
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
No, first of all, what's the point of having more enforcement? So if they come across a tax cheat who's really stealing and their new enforcement people uncovered it, they didn't know it before, but now they got new resources and they've uncovered. And there's a guy making $390,000 a year and he owes the government $100,000. He's not paying it, but they're not going to go after it. Well, then I want my money back then, too, because that's a bad deal. So they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. And that makes no sense to say we are going to uncover tax cheats and we're not going to go after them if they make a certain amount of money. Their point is we are not uncovering everything we can uncover. So at some point then, to justify this, they're going to have to go after what they find. They've already talked about wanting greater scrutiny on Venmo accounts. So I'll just ask you and anyone else out there who pays their babysitters on Venmo and tips their valet drivers on Venmo and so forth, do you think the people that you regularly pay with Venmo make over $400,000 a year?
I don't.
So the whole entire thing is just comically silly, if it wasn't so actually, I think, dangerous.
Yeah, that's when I try to read the tea leaves, it makes me really nervous. I remember however long ago it was that the government was talking about monitoring everybody's bank account that had like $500 in it or something like that. And it's like, that seems very, very invasive. I don't want to be an alarmist or a conspiracy theorist, but it does seem like the future is not looking good.
In terms of the specifics of tax compliance and
just government and overreach and them wanting to take money from me.
Yeah, I wrote a book. It was the first book I ever wrote, and it came out 5 years ago called Crisis of Responsibility. And I'm a lifetime movement conservative. I have a very deep philosophical appreciation for the kind of political philosophy known as conservatism and the kind of Burkean order and in a classically liberal tradition. And yet I got myself in a little bit of trouble with some of my conservative friends, because in the 10th chapter of that book, I suggested that the problem with the government overreach is generally a people, a society, a population that wants government overreach, that tolerates it, that has failed in self-government so badly that they don't blink at allowing the government greater role into things, whether it be healthcare or various economic overreach and whatnot. I think the welfare state is largely a byproduct of a failure of self-government. And so to the extent that I'm pessimistic, as you are, about the future government overreach, I basically agree, but I put the root of that problem with the people, not with the government themselves, who I think are merely responding to the really gracious hall pass the American people are giving them.
As you look at where the country is today versus 6 months ago, 2 years ago, do you feel as though people are becoming more cognizant and looking to revoke that hall pass that we've sort of just tacitly handed the government.
Yeah, I guess marginally I do. I think that that will probably end up being one of the great factors out of the COVID moment, is that a certain degree of apathy was kind of slapped around a little bit, and that there is some animating force right now in folks that maybe do want to push back a little on the government overreach. A lot of it comes from some of the most effective and active members of society, which tend to be moms, and they don't tolerate well. They could be apolitical. They could even be center left in their political orientation. I don't have a monopoly on being against government overreach just because I'm a conservative. But in the COVID moment and schools being shut down irrationally for so long, and some of the just arbitrariness about many of the policies and the way that whole thing played out, I think that woke a lot of people up. What the stickiness of it is TBD. But there is a moment we're in right now where I think there are some that are indeed pushing back. Now, the negative side for me is, pessimistically, many on the right tend right now to be looking for more government overreach. They just want it on their side. Like, they want the government to do all the things that we've said we don't want them to do, but we want them to be doing it on behalf of causes that are more acceptable into the right right now, particularly as a backlash against a lot of the excess of wokeism or ESG or the cancel culture or these other kind of atrocities. So I don't know if philosophically our ultimately I'll be more encouraged, and I can answer you with more brevity once I become convinced that we have a strong value being placed on self-government, on individual character, on virtue, on faith, on institutions. I think all those things matter. And I don't see us really moving in that right direction there yet. So other endeavors along the way against government overreach, I think, are likely to be more temper tantrums than they are culture moving moments.
Got it. Appreciate that. Well, you are certainly putting your time and money and efforts where your mouth is. You have recently created a new economics course that people can have access to. And certainly I'm always excited when somebody like you, who obviously has intelligence and experience and all this important stuff, takes the time to do something like that, and then we can access it. So if we are interested in educating ourselves so we can be more proactive, tell me a little bit about the project.
Well, I basically volunteered at the high school that I helped start in Newport Beach, California. So Pacifica Christian High School has about 300 students, ninth grade through 12th grade. It was something that I was a co-founder of beginning out in 2013. We went live with the school in 2015 after 2 years of planning and preparation. And when I say 2 years, there was a lot more before that, but 2 years of really officially with a shovel in the ground, so to speak. And then last year, I taught economics to upperclassmen as an elective course at the high school. And out of that endeavor, it forced me to prepare the course. It forced me to systematize it, to develop a syllabus, a curriculum, an outline for how I thought an introduction to economics ought to be taught to that age group. And there were things I would have done different, and I turned a knob here and turned a knob there. But when all was said and done, that dress rehearsal of actually teaching it led me to go actually memorialize the course in my studio. And so we recorded 30 lectures and made available the syllabus with all the links and all of the reading materials, all the quizzes, tests, essay prompts, final exam, a full kind of semester course of introduction to economics in a box that we've made available for free at Bonson.com. And so that was really driven by my belief that some foundational understanding of economics is needed, even and perhaps especially from those who already have a reasonably affectionate connection to free enterprise. I think a lot of people in the American DNA generally agree with the notions of what we call capitalism. I'm not a big fan of the term, but the idea of a market economy, of some form of laissez-faire economics. I think that that's how most of us are wired, but I don't think it's how most of us have been trained and have really prepared ourselves to think intellectually, morally, and academically. And so that's what the course is intended to do. Provide a basic foundation for how we think about economics. And I've been blown away at the response so far, and I truly believe it has the potential to have an impact on people. I'm excited.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to dig into it personally because I know how much I enjoyed your book and your style of communicating and taking difficult to understand ideas and making them easy to understand. So thank you for creating the course.
Well, thank you for saying that. I look forward to getting your feedback, and thanks for all your kind words.
Love it. Well, David, give us the website again for how we could find the course, and then the other ways, if somebody's interested in becoming a client of yours, how all that works.
So the website is bonson.com, and because the name is spelled a little bit less than phonetically, I will spell it out, bahnsen.com. And right when one gets there, they'll see the economics course very clear on the website and can go in and enroll. And like I said, there's no cost and it's all there. And we think it's pretty turnkey. People can work through it at their own pace and so forth. So other than that, I'm pretty easy to find online, social media and video and my weekly investment commentary. Bonson.com is kind of that homepage for all the things I'm doing. And so those who are interested in staying in touch with what we're about have the ability to do so.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show David your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to bahnsen.com. That's bahnsen.com, and take advantage of that free economics course. And you know, subscribe to all David's musings and the effort and work that he puts in to, again, make difficult stuff easy to understand and just better equip us to be able to make good decisions. Thanks again, David.
Thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fights. We are all in this together.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.